Joe Biden chooses Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. The stage is now set for a campaign, including new threats of foreign interference.
This is not something that's going to go away. This is a reality of our modern technological world.
Our cybersecurity reporter will tell us about attempts to stop it. Plus, several coronavirus vaccines are in development, yet the government is already spending billions on shots, even though nothing's approved yet. And phones can predict our next word in a text message. We'll look at efforts to get artificial intelligence to write an entire story. It's Wednesday, August 12th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. We're expecting Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris to appear together in Wilmington, Delaware today. We talked about the announcement last night. Harris is the first Black woman and the first woman of Asian descent to be nominated for VP by a major party. President Trump said he was surprised by the pick.
She was very disrespectful to Joe Biden, and it's hard to pick somebody that's that disrespectful when she said things during the debates, during the Democrat primary debates that were horrible about Sleepy Joe, and I would think that he wouldn't have picked.
Meantime, former President Barack Obama tweeted support, saying Senator Harris is more than prepared for the job. We have a video about her, and we'll have coverage throughout the day on WSJ.com. The drug maker Moderna says it'll provide the U.S. government with 100 million doses of its experimental coronavirus vaccine. The price tag, more than $1.5 billion. Moderna's vaccine is among the most advanced. A large study is underway now. Health officials hope to know if the vaccine works by November or December. The government has spent a total of more than $9 billion on shots from Moderna and other companies. For the first time in more than 100 days, New Zealand is reporting its first locally transmitted cases of the coronavirus. It comes after very stringent conditions to contain it in a country often cited as among the most successful in controlling the pandemic. The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Panett is on the story.
Authorities are scrambling to figure out what happened, and the outbreak on the remote island country raises a lot of questions about whether it's possible for any country to really keep out the coronavirus. So New Zealand imposed one of the world's strictest lockdowns in April and May, which helped it effectively eliminate the virus within its own borders. And since then, it's been managing a very strict quarantine with very few exceptions. Only New Zealanders have been able to return to the country. And they've been kept in quarantine facilities for 14 days upon arrival.
Just ahead, an Airbnb IPO may not be the biggest this year. I'll look at why companies would go public in the middle of a pandemic. New data shows Britain's economy taking one of the hardest hits in the world, shrinking more than 20% in the second quarter. No developed nation is reporting GDP numbers that bad during the pandemic. As we talked about yesterday, the UK is also reporting the most COVID-19 deaths in Europe. As we told you exclusively on the podcast last night, Airbnb is close to filing paperwork to go public. Its long-awaited IPO could happen before the end of the year. Now we're going to take the conversation a step further. It's not the only company hoping to go public amidst the economic uncertainty of the pandemic. Jack Ma's Ant Group could become the biggest IPO in history later this year in a debut on Asian stock exchanges. Here's markets columnist Mike Bird.
U.S.-listed IPOs have actually had a great year so far. They've raised $60 billion through the year, which is putting them on track for the biggest year in two decades. You might be surprised to hear that because it's been very difficult to do some parts of a traditional IPO process. You can't go out and obviously physically meet bankers, physically meet investors. But actually, with stock markets where they are at the moment, it's actually a very hospitable environment for companies to do this. Interest rates are very low. You've seen particular interest, unsurprisingly, perhaps from biotech companies, a huge number of which have listed this year, on track for easily the biggest year in that sector. You're going to see companies that want to access equity finance anyway, and given that even though the pandemic is going on, the market conditions are actually much more friendly to going to do that, it's actually a good time for some of them to do it.
Looking ahead, the U.S. Consumer Price Index is out today. It'll tell us just how much we're paying for stuff these days. We'll also get earnings from Cisco Systems and Lyft. Coming up, it's Trump-Pence versus Biden-Harris, and in the shadows of the internet, foreign spies lurk, eager to tip the scales. We'll look at the threats and what's being done to stop them after a very short break. We now know who's on the Democratic ticket, and the party conventions are coming up. As the campaign intensifies, there are growing concerns about foreign governments working to interfere with the race. For a look at where things stand, we're joined by The Wall Street Journal's Dustin Volz. He covers cybersecurity and intelligence. Hey there, Dustin.
Hey, Mark.
Dustin, the National Security Advisor has expressed concern surrounding China, Iran, and Russia. Where are the biggest threats when it comes to campaign and election interference?
Well, certainly these three are top of mind for U.S. intelligence officials focusing on securing the 2020 election. Russia, China, and Iran are sort of generally seen as major cybersecurity threats. But when it comes to election security, increasingly these three are viewed as sort of the top issues of concern as well. But it's important to note that Russia is sort of seen by many officials as a step above anything that Iran or China is doing or attempting to do in the 2020 election. And this should not be that surprising given what we saw in the 2016 election, which you may recall involved a wide range of activities that were later linked to Moscow trying to interfere in the election to harm Hillary Clinton's candidacy and boost Donald Trump's. And the concerns are that Russia, their level of activity using disinformation, potentially targeting voter registration systems in states and so forth, that their activity is, as one official described it, a hurricane coming at us, while the others from China and Iran are sort of more passive and more public-facing in many ways. And in other words, China is very interested in our politics and our policies as it relates to China, whether that's trade or Hong Kong or other things, and wants to understand that and potentially impact that debate. But it's very different than sort of the covert disruptive operations that we've seen from Russia in the past and that officials are worried about happening again in 2020.
And Russia has denied election meddling allegations. Dustin, though, as far as prevention is concerned, are there measures, are there steps that can take place that could be effective?
You know, election interference has always been with us. It's been with us as long as we've had elections, essentially, in this country and elsewhere. And as long as we have a globalized world, we're going to have foreign actors that are interested in potentially trying to interfere. There are steps that can be taken. I mean, I think it's important to note that since 2016, for example, our protection of voter registration systems and other state elections equipment have improved dramatically. You've seen the states work with federal agencies such as the Department of Homeland Security to really share a lot more information, to improve their systems, to move away from some of the vulnerable machines that we saw targeted by Russia in 2016, because the main way that they're trying to tamper with it is by undermining our trust in our vote.
What are you hearing from the Biden and from the Trump campaigns?
Well, the Biden campaign is extremely concerned about foreign disinformation linked back to Russia that could seek to somehow impact his vote. So we saw the intelligence community last week come out and say that Russia is seeking to denigrate his campaign. The Trump campaign has said, look, we're going to win this fair and square. We don't need foreign help. We've never asked for foreign help. Joe Biden is just trying to make up excuses for why he's going to lose the election. So certainly different approaches in how the campaigns are sort of talking about it and preparing for it, but it is something that's on the minds for both of the candidates and the campaigns.
Dustin, obviously a lot of attention on international interference. Are there domestic concerns as well?
There are absolutely domestic concerns as it relates to interference in the election or disinformation in the election. This is a much harder problem for officials and social media companies like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube to deal with, in part because there are First Amendment protections, and what people say about their own election and their own country is very different than someone in St. Petersburg pretending to be an American on a social media platform and posting all these things as if he were a voter in a battleground state. So domestic disinformation, domestic interference, those are absolutely real things, but our ability to handle them is still a point of extreme friction in terms of what the companies are able to do and what they're willing to do. So everyone can be guilty of spreading, you know, misinformation, disinformation, wittingly or otherwise. And when it comes to sort of the domestic audiences, particularly those in power, the challenges of addressing it and approaching it in a way that is not going to create too much backlash for the companies or, you know, infringe on First Amendment freedom of speech protections is a very, very difficult problem and one that we're still struggling to deal with.
The Wall Street Journal's Dustin Volz. Dustin, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
And finally, we've all been there. You're writing an email or sending a text, and the words you're thinking suddenly appear. AI has learned how to finish our sentences. Often it makes sense, but there are limitations and the occasional bizarre suggestion. Researchers are working to take AI further to where a computer could write a whole story. The WSJ's Jared Counsell covers artificial intelligence.
People think it could lead to smarter writing tools that, you know, could be involved in producing journalism, God forbid, or writing movie scripts. Because right now, if you ask a machine to do that, it'll produce something that, you know, sounds okay and that makes a little bit of sense. But the longer it goes on, the less, you know, coherent it is, and it doesn't sort of have any real destination. It's just sort of like babbling. You know, they think, again, if a machine can reason better, it can come up with like storylines and plot lines that are interesting.
You can take a quiz to test if you can tell the difference between sentences an AI wrote and those by humans. That's on WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Wednesday. We're back tonight with an updated episode. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.